Welcome to
America's Cannabis Conversation,
where you can hear experts from all facets of the cannabis business as to what's happening in this exploding industry. Keep yourself informed. Join the conversation. Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation. Quick news update. This is Dan Perkins. Threaten New Jersey. New Jersey marijuana sales could start just weeks after Election Day under a key senator's plan. If New Jersey voters approve a marijuana legalization referendum on the ballots next week, sales in the Garden State could get rolling at a record speed. A plan by one of the top lawmakers would allow the state's existing medical marijuana dispensaries to begin selling to adults over 21 within a month after the election. I think this is the most important thing, is to allow people to buy legal cannabis immediately, State Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Nix said in an interview. Those preferring to grow their cannabis at home, however, would be out of luck. People will not be permitted to grow marijuana from illegalized sources or homegrown or anything like that at this point, Gartucci said, adding that these issues can probably be addressed in the near future. Gartucci was discussing what to expect if New Jersey voters approve public question number one, which would legalize cultivation, processing and sale of retail marijuana in the state. The legalization measure is a brief 5 sentences, leaving most details up to the regulators and the lawmakers. South Dakota. Former federal prosecutor endorses marijuana legalization initiative in South Dakota. A former federal prosecutor endorsed South Dakota's ballot measure to legalize marijuana for medical and recreational use in a new ad campaign. Randy Zeller, who served as the U.S. Attorney for the District of South Dakota from 2015 to 2017, said that the proposals are well-written, smart reforms of our hash marijuana laws. One mistake, possession of even a gram of marijuana can ruin a life, he said. It could mean jail, a record, making it hard to get a job, an apartment, or serve in the military. We can set this right by voting yes on Article A and 26. Saylor isn't the only former federal prosecutor backing the far-reaching cannabis reform in South Dakota. His predecessor, Brendan Johnson, actually sponsored an adult-use legalization initiative. South Dakota is one of the 5 states that will be voting on cannabis measures next month, but it is the only state where both medical and recreational legalization will be on the ballot. South Dakotans for Better Marijuana Laws, the campaign behind the recreational initiative, also recently released a separate ad with the retired Sioux Falls police officer who said that he was supporting the proposal because criminalization was a waste of taxpayers' dollars and law enforcement resources. California. Marijuana multi-state operator Forefront enters $30 million sale-leaseback deal to pay down debt. Multi-state operator Forefront Ventures is utilizing a $30 million sale-leaseback transaction to rid itself of debt to the corporate lender. The all-cash deal with California-based Innovative Industrial Properties, IIP, involves the sale of cultivation and production facilities owned by Forefront in Washington and Massachusetts. IIP will then lease the facilities back to Forefront under a 20-year lease agreement so the Arizona company continue to use them. The money will be used by Forefront to pay down the outstanding senior secured debt obligations to affiliates of Gotham Green Partners of California. Forefront CEO Leo Guthemucker said in a statement that the move will help shore up the company's balance sheet and give the business more flexibility to fund our growth initiatives in our core markets of California, Illinois, Massachusetts, Michigan, and Washington State. The deal, expected to close by December, is only the latest that Innovative Industrial Properties has entered into in the cannabis area. Our final story comes from Missouri, as a Missouri official predicts recreational marijuana legalization in the 2022 vote. The director of Missouri's medical cannabis program expects adult-use marijuana to be on the state's ballot in 2 years. Lindo Falker, a director of the state's medical marijuana program, told the Kansas City TV station that he believes legalization of medical marijuana was a stepping stone to full legalization. I think that was the intent of the drafters, Fraker's. Fraker's program, who's overseen by the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services, we've said we've already heard that they are going to try and work to get it on the ballot, but I don't think the legislature will do it. He went on to say that he thinks that they'll have to petition. It's going to be on the ballot in 2022. I'm very confident of that, but I don't know what the language will look like. Missouri legalized medical marijuana in 2018 with 66% of the vote, and the sales recently began. And that's your American Cannabis Conversation quick news. Now let's see who's joining the conversation. First off, what's going to happen with the MORE Act? Gary Allen, the COO of New Frontier Data, which helps cannabis businesses make the right decisions on data. We'll talk about legalization and changes. Our favorite Dr. Jordan Tischler, our cannabis doctor on call, talks about the many ailments that cannabis can treat. Russell Bronson, who is the founder of ClickFunnels, a website that sells funnel builders to entrepreneurs, will join us to talk about his new program. Morgan Fox, the media relations director for the National Cannabis Industry Association, is going to talk to us about what he's expecting over the next 6 months as we get through the elections and what's going to be happening to the cannabis industry. So another good conversation. If you haven't had a chance to listen to some of the recent shows, go to W420RadioNetwork.com and you'll be able to go to the archive section and download any of the shows over the last year or so that you want. Thanks for listening. Let's join the conversation. I'm Dan Perkins.
Welcome back to the conversation. And joining us again is Gary Allen, the COO of New Frontier Data. And this program will air just before the vote in the House on the MORE Act about descheduling cannabis. And I thought I would like to speak to Gary about what his observations are about what's going on in Congress and what's happening around the country about deregulation and expansion of the market. So welcome back again, Gary.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure. So let's talk about the MORE Act and what your institutional vision is about what's going on there.
Absolutely. I'm bringing this just real quickly. So listen, the MORE Act is obviously, it's designed to decriminalize and potentially not only decriminalize marijuana use and also rename it in the federal guidelines as cannabis instead of marijuana, but it's also intended to give the federal government and states the authority and the runway to annul those convictions and roll back those convictions for marijuana use. It's still pretty fuzzy as far as some of the larger possession convictions. It's also designed to put in some protections and pave the way for the Safe Banking Act and to allow the Safe Banking Act to actually be legal without the Safe Banking Act necessarily passing in and of itself. And so I think those are the two things that people are really focused on. You know, and the result of those things, marijuana being renamed in the federal government's cannabis sounds a little bit like splitting hairs, but it's actually not. And a lot of that is because of the inference that the word marijuana comes from, or that the word marijuana places on everything from the sale of it to a conviction because of the use of it. And then secondarily, really, once we have safe banking practices and acceptable banking practices that allow the industry to operate within the guidelines of our federal government, the industry is really designed. It's really set to explode from there.
Right. I would agree. I would say, not disagreeing with you, but taking a different position. As I look at the MORE Act, I think that the most important part, not the only part, but I think the most important part of this legislation is the elimination of 280E. Most people don't know anything about 280E as it relates to the cannabis industry.
Right.
And just to tell the audience, 280E is a provision of the Internal Revenue Code that does not allow cannabis operators to deduct normal operating expenses against revenue. So the tax liability of somebody who's in the cannabis business is incredibly high. And as you said in a previous show, the idea of making a profit is dramatically reduced by the tax liability and the cost of not being able to deduct the operating expenses. So that's part of this new bill. I started before the Democratic convention interviewing people about this legislation, which was supposedly coming out in a week or so. And I would say to you, Gary, that a lot of the people in the industry that I interviewed were very disappointed at the Democratic platform when the platform committee voted almost 2-1 not to include any descheduling of cannabis. And now recently, in the last few days, I've been seeing what they call rumors on the Hill that people who were supportive of the Moores Act, Denny Hoyer, in the House, is saying maybe this is not the best time because of the proximity to the general election to put this issue on the table. Now, the proponents are saying it's still on schedule, but we've got people talking about maybe postponing this because of the November election. If it gets postponed and the Democrats lose control of the House and President Trump gets reelected, then what's the likelihood of reform in the cannabis industry?
Well, I think there is a lot to unpack with that question. So a couple of things. One, the likelihood, so I think as New Frontier Data, as the CEO of New Frontier Data, and as Gary Allen, in my personal opinion, I think it's really important that we look at this through a very realistic lens. The idea that we're somehow going to get some national legalization and or descheduling in and or around the election is highly unlikely. The House is going to pass the Moore Act. We believe very, very strongly that the House is going to pass the Moore Act. We don't believe that the Senate, we don't believe that it will come to a vote. The Senate, the current Senate, will not bring it up, and they will not take it up and for a vote before the election. And certainly, you know, with the predicted chaos that everybody believes is going to happen in the political climate between, you know, November 3rd and January 20th, it's just going to be overcome by events. And I think it's just a very it's just a very realistic look at what's about to happen. All of that being said, this is 2020. And I don't think that that is a I don't think that that's a fact we can ignore. Meaning, really, really strange things have happened this year with Kamala Harris really going after this as the former Attorney General of the fifth largest economy in the world, and somebody who has been criticized heavily on her enforcement of these laws specifically, her voice can't be underestimated and how powerful it will be, especially as growing over the next 60 days. So we don't believe this is going to get out of the Senate at all. We don't believe it's going to get on the Senate floor. However, with the Biden-Harris ticket saying that they're really going to take this on, it may just do that. All of that being said, we also believe that there is going to be a need for the safe banking portion of the Moore Act to be back into the Safe Banking Act, and we actually believe that may get through early in January. Or late in January,
wow.
Sorry, when they come back in session. And if that happens, obviously that will open up the market. One other thing really important to understand as well is that with the number of ballot initiatives in November, You know, we are very quickly getting to that two-thirds majority, right? And listen, I'm not going to, you know, even approach what a two-thirds majority means constitutionally. All I mean that is that we may very well be at that tipping point. That again, 2020 is 2020, and because depending on how many of these states actually pass, Arizona is going to be a really important one to look at. It failed in 2016. Polling looks super strong right now that it won't fail. The pharmaceutical companies who were mostly to blame for or credited with the opposition succeeding in Arizona of that recreational legalization, they seem to be taking a sidestep, right, or a sideline approach right now. So if Arizona tips, that's a very influential state that has a very large, mature medical market that could very quickly activate a recreational market. New Jersey is a very large Northeast market, very important Northeast market that looks to be ready to legalize and legalize quickly. South Dakota, there are very key states that if they tip, then 40 plus states in the United States will have access, and that will just further bolster the fact that, I don't know if you knew this statistic, 98.3% of all American citizens live in a place where they can legally access cannabis, either medically or recreationally.
So with all that chaos going on, what do you think 2021 and beyond looks like in terms of revenue growth in the industry?
Well, we have very specifically, we tend to be pretty... We tend to be pretty accurate with we're looking at a little over just about $25 billion in 2021, right? A little over $20 billion mm-hmm. in 2020. Just a year and a half ago, we had projected that we had a projection that 2025 would be somewhere around $30 billion. We're now projecting 2025 to be somewhere about $36 billion. And now this is with our current market as it is. Now, if these states, these numbers will change dramatically. And if you don't mind, I'm not going to release those numbers on this particular program right now because we have not made them public yet. We're finishing up our modeling, but we do plan in the next 14 days, we do plan on releasing revised 2021 to 2025 numbers based on the states, you know, a projection based on the states that we believe will go legal. And then right after Election Day, we will release a new one based on the states that did go legal.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Gary, we're out of time. We've been speaking with Gary Allen, who's the COO of New Frontier Data, a company that I kind of discovered and think is a terrific resource for us on the show. Gary, how can people follow the research and the things that you're doing?
Well, at any one of your favorite social outlets, the at New Frontier Data is the easiest way. info@newfrontierdata.com or sales@newfrontierdata.com. We have a number of newsletters. If you go to newfrontierdata.com, you can sign up for our Cannabit, Canna Week. We have podcasts. We're really accessible, and our staff and our team really enjoy talking to the market. So please come have a chat with us.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dan. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. This is a very unusual interview that we had. Terrific interview with Gary. If you missed any portion of it, you need to go back to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and look for Gary and this interview. It's a terrific interview. So was another one we did. You'll find it extremely enlightening and discovering a company, as I did, who has tremendous expertise in the cannabis space. We'll be right back.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network, America's Cannabis Conversation.com. Your new cannabis electronic checking account can offer you PIN secure credit and debit cards for your clients. We can place a cashless ATM at your checkout counter, which reduces the amount of cash on hand. Did you know that we can help you bring legacy cash into your new cannabis electronic checking account? No more paying with cash. Making payments with your electronic check is safe and secure. So if you find yourself up at night worrying about somebody breaking in and stealing your cash, consider a cannabis electronic checking account. To find out if a cannabis electronic checking account is right for you, call 888-420-8884 and ask for Dan Perkins. That's 888-420-8844. AmericasCannabisConversation.com. Want to find out if cannabis can help your medical condition? It's time to hear from our cannabis doctor on call.
Welcome to the conversation and to a very important thing that we're going to initiate today. We have our doctor, Dr. Jordan Tischler, who is a specialist that deals with many different problems with people using cannabis in many cases to treat therapy. We are starting a segment that the doctor will be on a regular basis called the Cannabis Doctor on Call. And what I've asked Jordan to do is to look at all of the various ailments that the states say are appropriate to use cannabis to treat. And we're going to go in depth so that you can get an understanding of the issue, and then what are the challenges, and then finally, how cannabis might help you deal with the issue. So welcome to the conversation, Doctor.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Our first subject is probably the biggest issue for the vast majority of people who are considering cannabis, and that is pain management. Talk about pain management as a medical issue from your practice and in general, which, if you would, please, Doctor.
Sure. You know, the nail on the head. Pain is an enormous issue sort of around the world, certainly for Americans. We have data that suggests that of all of the issues confronting Americans, pain is sort of the number one complaint. And furthermore, what we understand is that pain is something where we're frankly not doing as good a job as we ought to be. And there are a lot of reasons for that, much of which have to do with the stresses of our society, but also have to do with the limitations that we have on what we have available to us as therapeutics. I think that our listeners understand that there are a bunch of over-the-counter type medications, primarily Tylenol, which is a medicine that sort of lives in its own class. And for many people, Tylenol can be very helpful, but for some people it's not helpful, and for other people it's contraindicated because of other aspects of their medical history, like liver disease. And so that's kind of one option that we have. And then there's a group of medicines called the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications. So that includes things like ibuprofen, Advil, Motrin, and there's a whole bunch of them. They're sort of all sort of functionally the same kind of medicine. And again, for some people, this can be very, very helpful. Other people can't tolerate it. There's certainly increased risk of bleeding ulcer or kidney disease as a result of taking too much of those sorts of things. And so we have to understand that those are options, but they're not always going to solve the problem. And the problem is once you get past those two options, there really isn't much left. I mean, the answer is opioids. And as we have become more and more aware, opioids both have their place in treatment, but also come with substantial risks. And we need to use them wisely and not cavalierly so that we get the best benefit with the least risk, which is, you know, I'm going to say that a million times about all medicines, including cannabis. So when you really boil it down, there are sort of three choices for pain control. And yeah, you know, we can throw in gabapentin and similar sorts of medicines, but those have even more limited application. So cannabis really brings to the table of a completely different approach, and in conjunction with the medicines that we've just talked about, really provides a whole new vista of ways to manage pain for patients.
So we're talking to Jordan Tischler, our cannabis doctor, on call and in the house. And while we have a moment here, doctor, tell people in the audience how they can get a hold of you and your practice.
Sure. My practice is called InhaleMD. You can find me online at inhalemd.com. And when you go online, you can find that we're available by email and by telephone. We do telephone or telemedicine consultations throughout the world. So if you have questions, we're readily available to help.
Thank you. Let's go back to the pain issue, because pain is such a huge descriptor. It could be anything from an injury, a fall, a torn muscle, a damaged muscle, a sprain, on and on and on. There are so many things that can happen to us that can cause pain in our body. It becomes very difficult. There's the aging process, myself mm-hmm. included. Pain is such a huge word. I mean, we know from studies that, as you and I have talked about, how older Americans who are dealing with the progressive pains of arthritis and rheumatism and all the other things are finding less and less relief and more problems with side effects of certain opioids or narcotics that just don't really do anything per se to treat the pain. And so they're looking as a group of people, surprisingly, a huge number of people in the over 50 market are looking for alternatives to the NSAIDs or the narcotics, and a lot of them seem to be turning to cannabis. What is it about cannabis that makes it a good painkiller?
Suffice it to say that we have in our bodies a system that's called the endocannabinoid system, and this is a very important and remarkably only fairly recently discovered system that allows for the management and crosstalk between many other systems that are key to our body function. So what this means is that when we have a series of problems like pain, which span sort of a range of different body functions, the endocannabinoid system becomes kind of the crucial connector. And so if we can get into that system using cannabinoid medicines that are derived from this plant material, then we can get in there and really shut down the problem. Because we now understand the specificity of how this medicine works and where it's working. And so oftentimes people with severe pain are going to need opioids. And I think we've gotten to a really weird place right now where everyone, like your wife, is so afraid of them that, you know, that they will run the opposite direction. And I think that that's not so great either, because opioids are effective, and particularly in the acute setting, like a hip replacement. And, you know, when used judiciously and for a short period of time, are relatively safe. But when we start to talk about longer-term problems like the arthritis that you mentioned, where the evidence that opioids are helpful is more is less convincing, and furthermore, the time duration is such that the issues around dependence become more significant, then we have to think about what are our options. And cannabis is a pretty good pain reliever. It's not super brilliant. We can't sort of gild the lily here, but it is remarkably effective. And also, nicely, it's not an either-or proposition. So we can use cannabis in conjunction with the Tylenol or the non-steroidals, and even with the opioids. The nice thing is that what we find when we've done the research is that when we're using it with people who have previously or currently on opioids, they actually need a whole lot less of the opioid to get the same level of pain control. So combining the two means you don't need to use as much of the opioid, and the risks from opioid are directly tied to how much you're taking. So if we're taking less, the risk is less. So this is really kind of a great combination to achieve best benefit with least risk.
We had an interview a couple of weeks ago
doctor with a veteran from the Gulf Wars who was a Navy SEAL, was injured 9 times, had 9 surgeries. And when he left the Navy, he was addicted to opioids. And his family did an intervention and introduced him to a doctor who prescribed a cannabis treatment for him. In 60 days, he'd cut his opioid consumption in half. In 2 years, he was totally off not only his opioid, but all of his other painkillers, and cannabis was giving him relief that he could have a decent life and deal with his pain. What I'm looking at is I'm trying to figure out, and I've been meaning to ask you this question, and I keep forgetting to do it. You said in just a few moments ago that this is, and we've only got about a minute, so this is a relatively new system, but it was there all the time.
Well, I think it's motor system, and we see the outcome of the motor system working. That's what I would call a primary effector system. It is something that does something very specific and actionable, if you will. And so we also have a dopamine surge system that controls our rewards, and we have a serotonin system that controls our mood. And so these are things where, you know, their primary action is kind of evident. The endocannabinoid system is what I call a meta system. It doesn't sort of do something like move your arm. It's the system that's coordinating between all of those other systems. And so its action is more veiled or subtle or hidden, you know, as a background player. And so it's really only because people started to look at THC and what it was binding to in neural tissue that we started to say, well, yeah, look, there's a receptor. Oh, well, there's a receptor. So now we have a system. What normally goes in that receptor? Oh, look, there's an endocannabinoid that binds to that receptor. And that's sort of the process by which you figure this stuff out. But it isn't sort of immediately obvious.
We've been talking with Dr. Jordan Tischler, and I want to give the audience a heads up that the next time you're on, we're going to talk about selecting a doctor and trying to figure out what is the right cannabis. But for now, doctor, tell them how we can get a hold of you.
Yes, come visit me online at inhalemd.com, or you can phone us. The number is 617-477-8886.
We'll put doctor's information on the website. And, doctor, thank you so much for a very insightful discussion. And we're looking forward to continuing this exercise for a long time to try and help our people and your patients. Thank you for joining us today.
Lovely. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Introducing the new Cannabis Electronic Checking Account. Did you know that in 2019, almost 1 in 5 dispensaries were either robbed or broken into? Your business is cash only, because up to now, you didn't have access to a banking account that would allow you to deposit the daily receipts from your business. Some owners have started a banking relationship only to be told in a few months that the institution was closing the account. For the first time, you can now have a reliable business checking account. Yes, I said a secure bank electronic checking account. For more information, call 1-888-420-8844 and ask for Dan Perkins. That's 888-420-8884 and ask for Dan Perkins.
This is Dan Perkins, and we're about halfway through today's conversation. I hope you have found the people interesting and helpful. In case you didn't hear all of the interviews in today's conversation, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com after 5:20 p.m. to listen to this show. W420RadioNetwork.com. And now, back to the conversation.
Welcome back to the conversation. And joining us again today is an author who has a wonderful book that can help all of us, especially small business people. Russell Brunson, and he's got a fascinating background as it relates to working at e-commerce and websites and helping people
grow their business, and especially in this time when we're trying to deal with the pandemic and how we continue to grow our business. Russell, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me back again.
So let's talk about your new book, Traffic Secrets, the Underground Playbook for Filling Your Website and Funnels with Your Dream Customers. Did I get it right?
Yep, you nailed it. That's the new book. It's all about, like you said, for business owners, how do you get traffic or people to come to you? And you know, I get the question a lot of people, like, well, what is traffic? And you think about with a traditional store, right? There's a store out there and there's literally traffic. There's cars driving past and they see your store and they come in, or they, you know, they walk, there's foot traffic, they walk past and they come in. And what we're talking about is just kind of the other traffic, which is online. Like, how do you get people and eyeballs to find you online? And that's what the whole Traffic Secrets book is all about.
So if I look at traffic in today's pandemic world, there are no cars on the street or very little cars on the street. And there are lots and lots of shops that are closed that people can't go into. Mm-hmm. And so more and more of what's going on has to be done online, whether it's ordering food to be delivered to your house, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. Online is becoming more and more important. And I wonder what your thoughts are about how quickly the various industries are evolving to an online model.
Yeah, I feel like if they're not evolving, then a lot of them are either going to be, you're dying, or they're going to be dead. And I think we've seen that so many companies who've gone under because they couldn't handle this, or the companies were smart were the ones figuring out, okay, how do I pivot? How do I change in this economy? Because you're right, like, you know, especially if you know, a lot of people try to go online and they put up a website, but then nobody comes to them, right? So it's like, it's not like a traditional store where you put it up there and people will drive by and see you. Like, you got to go out there and actually figure out how do I get that traffic? How do I market to get people to me? And if you don't, you know, it's scary. I got a buddy who owns a gym, who always thought he was protected and fine. He told me after this, he's like, I'm trying to figure out now, you know, if the pandemic comes back, or if there's a second wave or all these different things, like, what's my plan now? And he's scrambling to try to figure out how to do workout, you know, workouts from home and a whole bunch of stuff like that, so that, you know, worst case scenario, that they're protected. And I think that's the question on some people's minds right now, is how do we shift our business and get it online?
You say in your book, Russell, that don't wait for people. We were talking about traffic. Don't wait for people to come to you. How can an entrepreneur discover where the audience is congregating? Talk about that for a moment.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Like, the first question I always ask people is like, well, who is your dream customer? Like, I think a lot of times we just put up our business and like hope that the right people will come in. But the reality is, the first step you got to figure out who is the actual person you want. Cause if you don't identify who that is, you can't find them online. So for example, we have a friend who's a dentist, and she was, you know, running ads on Facebook all over the place, trying to get people to come in her dental practice. And she's spending a ton of money. And I asked her, I said, well, of all the people you're showing your ad to, who are the actual dream customers, the people you want the most? And she thought for a little bit. She said, well, the people that are worth the most money to us are people who are doing Invisalign. Like, that's the highest profit margin, stuff like that. And I said, okay, well, let's, like, tell me about, like, what do we know about those people? And she said, well, I know that's how much money they make per year, and this is the neighborhoods they're in, and this is kind of what it is. So we built an advertising campaign that just targeted just those people and told them about how she offered Invisalign. We turned off all the rest of her ads, and she did that. And what's crazy is, like, her ad cost dropped by, you know, 90%, and then she was able to get the exact dream customer she wanted. So the first question is, how do you get your dream customers? And the second one is, like, now that I know who my dream customer is, where are these people congregating? And that's one of the other interesting things about the internet is that all of us, we group ourselves together online based on stuff we're excited by, right? So those of us who are interested in, like, fitness, we hang out on fitness blogs and websites. You know, in your community, people are interested in cannabis, they're hanging out probably on blogs and websites and listening to podcasts and radio shows about that topic. And so if we know, like, my dream customer, man, they're here on this blog, this website, then our job is to say, okay, how do I get my message out in front of those people? Okay, if I can get my message in front of them, I can get their attention, I can pull them back to my website and bring them back online to where I'm at. So it's all about figuring out who's your customer, where are they at, and how do I get those people now? What are the hooks I can put out there to get them to come into my world?
Amazing. So let's use another example and see how you can help people.
Okay.
Let's say, you know, we've looked in our cannabis space, we've looked at what's happened in 2019. There was about a 60% decline in the value of equities in general. And starting off in 2020, just before the pandemic hit, that slump was continuing. And what the industry found is that there are a lot of people who own businesses who don't know how to operate businesses. Mm-hmm. They thought they were going to make a fortune, a quick hit, and now they're finding themselves in the nature and style to be able to run a business. And many of them don't have a lot of experience in running a business. They thought it was going to be pretty simple. Mm-hmm. So what would you recommend a person to do today if they were saying, look, I think the decline in the cannabis business is probably over in terms of valuations, mm-hmm. especially when they saw what happened during the pandemic where they were considered to be critical and they were allowed to stay open. If you're saying, well, maybe we're at the bottom and now is the time to start. If you were talking to somebody about a startup entrepreneurial venture, mm-hmm. what should they be doing different today?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think, and I tell this with most businesses that work that are startups, is like a lot of times we think about our business as the product we sell. But the reality is our business is the customers that we serve, right? So it's coming back and saying, okay, the first thing mm-hmm. is not gonna be like how am I gonna sell my product? First question should be like, well, where are my customers at? Before I start any business now, the first thing I do is I look for the customers. If I can find them first, like, oh, okay, they're over here on this website, or this is the blogs they're on. This is where there's an email list that I could rent that has my dream customers on, whatever those things are. I'm looking for those things first. That way, when I go and I decide to start the business and create the products and have all those things, I already know where the customers are. I'm not looking for them. The wrong way to do it is to create a product and then go look for customers. It should be like, I found the customers, find out exactly what they want, and then go get them. I heard somebody tell me one time that the simplest way to make money in business is, he said, it's a three-step process. Step number one is you find a hot market. Step number two, you ask that market what they want. And step number three is you give it to them. As opposed to right now, we're like, okay, I create this amazing product. I got this product. I'm going to go and shove it down people's throats. It's like, no. Like, it's find the people first, find out what they want, and then give that to them. And so that's where I would start is really spending time doing the research. Like, okay, when I start selling this thing, where am I going to get the traffic from? Where are the people going to come from? And mastering that first. And then it makes business really, really simple, because now you're just filling a need that people already have.
So you're going to look for companies mm-hmm. that are in the business of serving customers that you would like to also serve, and you're going to co-op with them by running advertising through those companies on their email list, trying to get them to come to you.
Yes, exactly.
Is that correct?
Yep, that's exactly how it works.
Great idea.
Yeah.
So I listened to what you said there, and on the surface, I'm somewhat of a Pollyannish person, so it sounded like a great idea. Then my practical person jumps in. Why would they want to do that? Why would they want to sell advertising to their clients on your products? Why would they want to do that?
Yeah, some companies don't. Some companies, they have an email newsletter and they sell their products. But the majority of people who spend the time to build up a newsletter, their revenue stream is from selling advertising. And so what we do is when we start searching for these opportunities is we'll find their website. And on the bottom of the website, if you scroll to the very, very bottom of the footer, usually there's a link that says like advertise with us or advertise here or media kit or something like that. You click on it and it'll take you to a page that says, hey, we have a newsletter that has 30,000 people and these are the demographics and this is how it works. And these are the ad costs. And so that's how they make their money. They spend money to build the list up, and then they sell advertising. And that's how they monetize, and that becomes their whole business for a lot of people.
So you could get a message out to 30,000 people for a hell of a lot less than you can try and build it on your own by simply buying advertising on somebody else's site.
Oh yeah, for sure. Definitely faster. Long term, I think it's good to do both. Like, we always buy ads to build our own newsletters, our own email lists up. But if I can shortcut that and say, look, I could spend the next 3 years building lists of 30,000 people, or I could give that person right there $500 and they'll send an email to them immediately. Like, I would always do that for the fast traffic as quick as we can.
We're talking to our guest, Russell Brunson, and we've been talking about all kinds of things, about discovering where your audience is and how you figure out where the people are and how they exist.
And one of the things that's important to you and one of your passions is how do you throw out a hook to get people to come to your site? And tell us about that. What can we do? What can people do?
This is like my favorite part because it's just where you start being creative. And so I always picture my dream customer, right? And I think that they're sitting at home, especially during times of quarantine, and they're on their phone on Instagram or Facebook or YouTube, and they're swiping through, you know, trying to find something to grab their attention. And so our job as business owners is to figure out what's the hook, what's the thing I can put out there that's going to grab their attention just long enough that I can tell them my story and then push them back to my website. And so that's kind of what we do. And I used to think in the past that I had to go create these expensive videos or commercials, but the reality is actually almost all the ads we make for our company right now are I made on my iPhone. And I actually pay my kids. I literally pay them $1 per video that they create. And so my production per video is $1. And we just try to figure out cool things, something that's going to grab someone's attention. So for example, the other day we went downtown and we were walking past and in the lobby of a hotel, we saw this big green rhino, which was this random thing. And they're like, wait a minute. If someone saw that on Facebook and they're swiping, they would probably stop to think like, what is that weird thing? So we ran inside. I gave my kids the phone. I clicked record. And the sound quality was horrible because it's in a hotel lobby. I was like, hey, my name's Russell Brunson. I'm standing next to this big green rhino because I want to tell you about the new product that I have. We made this one minute video ad. We took that, we posted it online, we showed it to just our dream customers. And so far that ad's been seen by over 1 million people. And it's just sold tons of copies of my book. And so we're always looking for like little fun things like that we can do to create that's going to grab someone's attention just long enough that I can tell them my story and then push them back to my website or into my funnel.
Terrific. So, Russell, how can people, I know they can get your book at www.trafficsecretbook.com, but how do they get a hold of you and your company?
Yeah, they said that right now we're doing a special offer because it's launch week for the book. So we actually bought a whole bunch of hardbound copies. So you can get a free one over at trafficsecretsbook.com. And then if you want to learn more about our company, if you go to clickfunnels.com, all the information is there. And that's where they can find out more about us and get a hold of us if they need to.
Good. Thank you so much for putting up with the technical issues and joining us today. It's been a fascinating conversation.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me.
If you didn't hear all of this terrific interview with Russell, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com and download this and its previous appearance and other shows to keep yourself abreast of what's going on in the cannabis and marketing industry. This is Dan Perkins. Thanks for joining us.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business in markets like Boston, Las Vegas, Reno, Orlando, and more. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us today is Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association, who's been a regular on our show for the better part of a year. And he's going to talk to us today about the future. He's not going to go into a crystal ball and say, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. He's going to talk about what is his organization thinking about could be happening over the next 6 months to a year. So, Morgan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So there's the question. What does your organization think are some of the things that might be bubbling to the top over the next between now and the end of the year, and what would you look forward to in 2021?
Well, I think that the thing that we're watching most closely in the most immediate future is whether or not Congress will be able to come to a deal on a new coronavirus relief package. The version that the House just approved on October 1st is actually the third time that the House has approved the Safe Banking Act in some form. Last September, it was approved as a standalone bill with an overwhelming bipartisan support. It was included in the language of the First Heroes Act earlier this summer. and now has been approved again in the HEROES 2 Act. So, I mean, the fact that the House has approved this bill basically three times, I think, is pretty impressive and shows that it has continuing momentum. The real question is whether or not the two parties, as well as the two chambers, can come up with an agreement on the coronavirus relief package. And cannabis banking reform is, despite what some lawmakers may be saying in terms of their talking points and supposed outrage, is not a poison pill for this thing. There are a lot more concerns, mostly related to the total dollar amount, as well as where some of this revenue is being allocated, that are the main sticking points for Congress, particularly between the House and the Senate and Democrats and Republicans. The inclusion of cannabis banking is not going to be what determines whether or not this this bill is passed or not, or whether or not a deal can be made or not. The Safe Banking Act is revenue neutral.
Okay. Do you know whether or not there's relief for 280E in the new version?
There is not. Yeah, there hasn't been a 280E provision included in any of the coronavirus packages.
Okay. So we still have that huge tax burden that the industry pays.
That's a huge problem, but that would be dealt with by a passage of a descheduling bill such as the MORE Act, which we're hopeful to get a vote on after the election.
Okay. So that's on your radar between now and the end of the year. What's on your radar, say, looking in 2021?
Well, I think that 2021 is going to be the year when we really need to focus on the Senate, because it looks like there's plenty of momentum going on in the House. So in addition to pushing through, if safe banking does not pass as an inclusion in a coronavirus relief package, we'll need to pivot to pushing the standalone bill through the Senate. And things are starting to improve in that environment. There's growing support. As we've spoken about before, the fact that cannabis businesses were declared essential, I think, kind of raised the esteem and legitimacy of the industry in the Senate, as well as the general public. And conversations are ongoing with Senate leadership about addressing the concerns that they have regarding cannabis banking. Interestingly enough, many of them don't really impact banking per se. They're extraneous issues that are related to cannabis, but we're working to address those issues. We're also going to, hopefully if we see passage of the MORE Act at the end of this year in the House, we'll need to start working on that in the Senate as well, and trying to determine what the compromise bill is going to look like, because the Senate will almost certainly start to narrow some of the scope of that bill when it gets to their chamber. Beyond that, there's going to be a lot going on in terms of federal agencies developing new rules. We're looking at the FDA, the USDA, and the DEA all asking for information and guidance on how they can change their rules, be that whether related to research or classification or various other policies that they have in place that govern things like hemp and hemp-derived products. So I think it's going to be a very interesting year in terms of executive rulemaking. Also, we're going to be looking at a number of state legislatures that are starting to address this issue as we start to pull out of the pandemic, and state legislatures have more time to address different issues. I think high on the list is going to be New York State and Pennsylvania and Virginia, as well as maybe some of the northeastern states. That's going to be on top of the states that are almost certain to pass ballot initiatives come November. And next year, they're going to have to start working on the issues of regulation and implementation of those systems when voters approve them.
So if we get New Jersey, which supposedly is the crown jewel of this year's November voting, which would be a tremendous influence in the Northeast, if New Jersey passes it, will the other states in New England, in order to protect their markets, have to capitulate and join in?
Well, almost all the other states there already have regulated cannabis markets. New Jersey and New York are some of the stragglers, basically. You're looking at Massachusetts, Maine, Vermont is about to have a legal system, hopefully, but possession is legal there. You know, I think that we might start seeing some of the other states that have already been discussing this, such as Delaware and Connecticut. I think that it's really going to, you know, for lack of a better term, light a fire under them to actually start moving along. Because while their state legislatures got pretty close to passing regulation and legalization over the last couple of years, they could never quite get there. And I think that you're absolutely right. New Jersey implementing a regulated cannabis system is definitely going to spur more movement in their neighbors' legislatures.
Yeah. I had an opportunity this week to speak to a research person from New Frontier Data, and she just recently published a paper on the approach of the state of Oklahoma to the cannabis business. And these are my words, not her word. It was revolutionary what they did. They made the licenses affordable. They didn't really put any limits on the number of dispensaries that could be opened. They created a quasi piece of legislation that allowed for both medical and recreational to exist at the same time, where other states have taken a much more laborious approach. And the business is doing quite well. And she said that other states who are not quite there yet or have two separate sets of rules are talking to Oklahoma about how they did what they did. And as a result, one of the things that they were interested in was the amount of minority businesses that were able to get into the business because a lower cost entry from a state standpoint. Do you think that that particular Oklahoma model has legs, or do you know anything about it?
Well, I think that there are maybe some drawbacks to the Oklahoma model, but it's almost entirely in the regulatory phase. The fact that they don't have any license caps and that they have very low barriers of entry for the program is phenomenal and something that should absolutely be copied in every other state with a regulated cannabis license. You know, having low barriers of entry really benefits small business people, particularly from marginalized communities who traditionally have a lot less access to capital than some of these other businesses. It removes competition from the licensing process and puts it in the market where it belongs. And so I think that from an entrepreneurial standpoint, that sort of a system is ideal. Obviously, once the markets start to stabilize, there's going to be pretty stiff competition initially, but some businesses will fail, some will succeed, and smaller businesses will have a much better shot at being able to succeed than they would in some other states, particularly those that have very high barriers of entry, extremely high levels of taxation, and very onerous regulatory restrictions that require them to lay out a significant amount of money on a regular basis. We might see things like production gluts or, massive price deflation as we saw in Oregon, but these are things that eventually will settle out of any market where it finds equilibrium.
Yeah, there's some people that are talking about deregulation in this from a standpoint that once you have the ability to ship product across state borders in a national market, and we're beginning to see where multi-state operators are building operations with the eye towards consolidation when regulations change. But does it not bode well for mom and pop?
Does what bode well?
If we get deregulation and we see this large multi-state operators come in and start taking over distribution and markets, mom and pop dispensaries may be a thing of the past.
Oh, I don't think so. I think that the market is going to look very much like what the beer market looks like, where you do have a number of large companies that have significant market share, but then you have a relatively equally large segment of the market that is more interested in craft products or in the way that they're sourced, and specifically consumer desire to support small businesses and perhaps support businesses that may have better business practices or better cultivation practices than some of the big multi-state operators. So I think that there's absolutely still going to be a market that supports small businesses when it comes to this industry.
We've been listening to Morgan Fox of the National Cannabis Industry Association. And if you missed any of this show, you can go to the W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and you can hear this and other appearances by Morgan. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in next Saturday at 4:20 p.m. for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation.
America's Cannabis Conversation.